County, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KABC. That's right. Friday. It happened. Inevitably, it does. 5 days from Monday. Here we are. Big 3 day weekend coming up. And that rounds off quite the week. I got some of my fun started early, and that was last night at home after the show. I'll tell you about that in a minute here. As per usual, if you'd like to be on the program, 800-222-5222 or email me, sam@samnation.com. So I get home and I want to follow this Montana race because, and I've kept meaning to talk about it here, but we only have an hour each night, so much going on, and I'm limited as to what I can get to every day. So at any rate, I've been keenly interested in this race because now for weeks, we've been told about the tight race in Montana and how Trump's unpopularity is going to sink the Republican candidate there. And this was a race, if you're unfamiliar, with a House seat that was vacated by Ryan Zinke, who is the now the Secretary of Interior in the Trump administration. So the popular thinking was that the Democrats would run a candidate, a sort of a folksy character who would take the state by storm and take advantage of Trump's tremendous unpopularity. And so what happened is that they got a guy to challenge the Republican guy. The Republican running, his name is Greg Gianforte. And the guy that's running again, well, he's kind of an odd duck. Rob Quist is his name. And he used to be a folk singer, part of some sort of group I've never heard of, but apparently was popular back in the 70s in Montana. Wore a cowboy hat, sang songs. He had a bunch of geriatric people show up to his rallies, and then some pajama-clad youngsters. You could even say millennials. And that was kind of the makeup of the energy at his rallies. So you can imagine it was quite powerful stuff. But it was not enough to deter the pundits from opining that this guy was going to sweep to victory and finally claim a seat just to show Donald Trump that America had had enough. And I'm sitting here, I'm scratching my head, I'm going, this isn't even news because it's Montana. I mean, come on, get a grip. It's a Republican red state. Trump won it by 20 points. But what was curious about it was that Gianforte, the Republican, before he went and body slammed Ben Jacobs, and I'll talk about that in a minute, he's the reporter for The Guardian, on the eve of the election, the day before the election, right? He body slammed, whatever. I'll talk about that in a sec. But he instead, Gianforte, instead of buying into the nonsense that the press was trying to put out there, which is Trump isn't popular, Gianforte, if a Republican wants to win an election right now, now you've heard this, if a Republican wants to win an election, what do they need to do? First things first, what do they need to do? Bail on Trump. That's right. You can't go into an election right now and wrap yourself around in Trump and echo in any way, shape, or form Trump's campaign rhetoric, let alone have the candidate himself endorse you and campaign for you. But that is exactly what the Republican in Montana did. That's the most important thing. That's what we've been missing here because we're certainly on the periphery of this. The reason that the little dinky one congressman, one district race special election is important is because the Democrats, the left is desperate to find a bellwether for their narrative. And their narrative is that nobody wants Trump. Nobody wants what Trump represents and what he's selling. So people don't even, not only do they not like Trump, okay, this according to Democrat left-wing logic, but they also don't want Trump's agenda, which you and I know is nonsense. People may have their differences with Trump, but they certainly like the agenda. And that's why this guy, Gianforte, is campaigning around draining the swamp. That was his entire spiel during the campaign, that he would not, that he was going to not be the type of Republican that allied himself with Paul Ryan and the establishment, but rather that he, as a multi-billionaire businessman who sold his IT company to Oracle, was going to be the type of Republican that would go to Washington, represent common sense interests, and ally himself with the Trump White House. And by implication, of course, draining the swamp of the various creatures that live in it that favor and advocate for the, you know, status quo. All right. That was the gist. And there were gleeful Democrats everywhere, right, saying this is exactly the kind of thing that is going to fail. It's going to crash and burn. And we're going to have our victory. And it's the same type of narrative that happened some months ago in Kansas. You'll recall some weeks back, there was a special election there as well. And we were told that Ron Estes, the Republican, was going to get his clock cleaned. And then he won 52 to 45%, something like that. So I told you that I got my weekend started early, and that is that I came home last night after the show. I kicked my feet up, and I had to. I checked. You know, I saw what the score was as the poll results started to come in around 9 o'clock, and I go, this is looking good for the Republican. No surprise. I must turn on CNN. This had shades of election night written all over it, I have to tell you. Remember I told you election night? Fox was boring. I had to watch CNN because I was watching a full-fledged meltdown. I mean, those ended up being epic, you know, epic clips there from their various reactions on election eve. But anyway, it was much the similar thing last night. They were in shock. And you know that they were, by the way, you know that they were planning something. They knew this was important because CNN, Fox already had reruns. I'm probably about 10 o'clock. Fox had reruns. MSNBC had reruns. But CNN invested in live programming, hoping that this was going to be their turning point in the anti-Trump movement. This is it. And it just blew up in their faces. They had a minority there. They had a couple guys, and they had an interesting panel. It was about six people. And they were all, Lewandowski was there too. Corey, they brought out Corey, who was Trump's campaign manager in the early stages of Trump's campaign. And he's a CNN analyst. But it was 5-on-1, as is typical there. You know, they had Corey kind of sticking up for the Trump agenda and the Republican agenda. But nonetheless, this race too, they thought that it would completely change once the punches were landed. And I told you I was going to get into this a little bit. So there's no video of it, but it's fairly undisputed that what happened on the eve of the election is that Gianforte grabs this reporter from The Guardian, Ben Jacobs, grabs him by the throat, slams him to the ground, and breaks his glasses. And you heard the responses. Yeah, I was poking some fun at it last night, but you heard the responses from serious Republicans like Paul Ryan and, of course, Nancy Pelosi. I mean, it was just across the board condemnation. This is not who we are. And this is the end of it. This is it. I mean, and what was the big discussion? The big issue that everybody wanted you to believe was how many votes were cast before the event versus after the event? How much early voting was there? And I watched Ari Fleischer discuss, oh, I like how it is in New York. No early voting. Because people should vote on the day of the election, all of them, so they have all the facts. And all these people that are going to be voting, this was before the fact, are going to be voting tomorrow, won't have all the facts. Who won't be voting tomorrow wouldn't have all the facts because they voted before the incident. And I have to tell you how wrong this logic was in its entirety. You think that Republicans in Montana that dominate, right? Just the raw numbers. There are more Republicans in Montana than Democrats. You're telling me that Montana Republicans aren't sick and tired of the whiny, snivelly press and weren't, many of them, secretly looking at what Jen Forte did and go, yeah, that's awesome. Not saying it's good or bad. I'm just explaining to you how somebody, how when the press tells you, put it to you this way, when the press tells you that this is unacceptable, it's going to change people's minds, it's going to be a turning point in a race and everything like that, what are they basing it off of? They're basing it off the sensibilities of the voters that surround them, the world that surrounds them. So sure, if somebody's running for Congress in LA County and that happens, the voters are done. I get it. But this is Montana. And the other thing is, you've got a predominantly Republican district. You've got predominantly Republican people. And these are independent, raw, many of them rural mountain people. It was a non-starter. So anyway, long story short, that's what happened. And the Politico piece, there's a great piece in Politico about it today because it's a national issue. And they're saying there's big takeaways. And I give credit to Politico. Usually, well, the piece is pretty shallow, but they have a great point here, which is that Trump was an asset in this race. See, the left's starting to realize that Trump actually is not the giant drag that they expect. They've painted a caricature. They've created a villain. They've constructed this entire Russia narrative. But it's not holding up. And it's certainly not holding up in these races that they expected that they would be able to take some ground. So Trump was an asset. But it also, I think, you know, it also just misses the greater point here. It says there's some guy in there, a Republican, a strategist, saying that Republicans are running terrible candidates. It's not the candidates. It's the message. It's the messaging. It's, remember what I told you how they said that they want to make this about Trump being a terrible person and just a horrible person. And he's this guy who's this brute and everything. Okay, fine, that's good. But what people want is they are sick and tired of the status quo. And Trump represents, the Trump movement, I'll put it that way, the Trump movement represents the greatest opportunity for change in a generation. And the Democrats need to get off of bashing Trump and move on to finding a competing message. And the fact is, Republicans saying Republicans are running terrible candidates. Give me a break. Rob Quist, the guy in Montana, he had some kind of a bankruptcy case that went on. Did you hear about this? He went bankrupt because he had to discharge some bills. He owed a lot of money for some bills and also some taxes. And if you've got to discharge taxes, it's a big deal. You've got to show why those tax monies are not owed. And what he did is he brought up this old medical malpractice case. Did you hear about this? And in the case, this is during the campaign. This, and by the way, happened all a year ago. This is not ancient history. It comes out that he has genital herpes. And I'm looking at this. I'm going, really? Oh, we're the ones that are, Republicans are running bad candidates? You guys are the party that ran Hillary Clinton. Are you literally the worst candidate in history? And while we're on the subject, you know, maybe these are just prototypical perfect types, you know, typecast Democrats. Because here you've got Rob Quist, and, you know, I see a prototypical Democrat. I do. Doesn't pay his bills, doesn't pay his taxes, and has herpes. I'm just saying. All right. Sam Rzhovsky, back right after this.
News.
Talk.
Evolve. Talk Radio 790. KABC.
So as I'm watching CNN last night about this Montana race, everybody's talking. It's unbelievable that this bully, this violent man, this horrible human being, this specimen of a mini Trump could possibly win this election. And then something interesting happened, which is Gianforte got up there to give his victory speech. And if you haven't heard this, it's pretty remarkable, because I don't know necessarily with pending criminal charges that I, as a lawyer, would advise him to say this. But listen to what he says, because he talks about what happened the day before and the assault.
Last night, I learned a lesson. And no, please, I need to share something from my heart here, and I just ask you to bear with me. And when you make a mistake, you have to own up to it. That's the Montana way.
Amen.
Last night I made a mistake. And I took an action that I can't take back. And I'm not proud of what happened. I should not have responded in the way that I did. And for that, I'm sorry.
And you're forgiven.
Please.
You know, I don't know if you caught it, but right when he starts to mention the assault, there's cheers that go up in the back of the room. And journalists have written about this, not necessarily objectively, but that, you know, that his supporters and a lot of people in Montana see that their local race was put under a national microscope, that all this outside money came in, especially from the Democrats, to influence a local election. To make it not about Montana, but to make it about Trump. They resented it. They saw that these, you don't punch anybody. Use your words, right? You don't use your fists. But there was an understand that people got it. So it's an interesting thing. But here's what happened as I watched this happen live. And as soon as it cut back away from his remarks, back to the CNN panel, it took the wind out of their sails. They came ready. You know, the good reporters over at CNN came ready to just tear this guy to smithereens. And it goes to show you, you know, you approach something palms up. And again, I say, look, he basically admitted to what he did. And he's, you know, in any court, he's going to be held responsible. This is a statement against interest. But it was the right thing to do politically. And I don't know if you caught it, too. I mean, his voice quivered, his eyes, he teared up. It was a sincere apology. And the main thing is, you know, he didn't do it as a last-ditch effort to win. He didn't give the apology before the election. He gave it after he won. It was very sincere. And it really did. It really just completely cut that whole argument. It took it off the table that night. And it kind of left CNN struggling a little bit. They didn't quite know where to go. But don't worry, the left-wing press picked it up again today. TheNation.com ran a piece this morning that was titled, "While Democrats Bicker, Another Bully Wins an Election." And the subheadline, "The Resistance to Trump Still Needs to Get a National Win on Board." See what I'm saying? They really see the resistance to Trump as their movement. And they're still, they still view the Trump movement as being some kind of a confederation of bullies, thugs, racists, homophobes, etc., etc. It's so offensive to the millions of people that are sick and tired of Washington BS and want change. It's so offensive. And the Democratic Party has got to figure out their answer to the voters' concerns, not their answer to Trump, not their answer to what the Republicans are doing. They've got to find an answer to what people are concerned about. But all they care about is, you know, air quotes, resistance. It's nonsense. Well, whatever you do, don't resist the news. It's coming up next, brought to you by my friend, John Wolfe. I'll be back right after this.
KABC News, live and local at 7:30. I am John Wolfe. Thank you very much.
Talk radio.
790 KABC.
And we're back, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, on Talk Radio 790 KABC. 1-800-222-5222 is the number here to reach us, and also my email address, sam@samnation.com. Okay. Oh, I wanted to talk about this. Did you see, I saw this this tweet had come across my feed today. From Geert Wilders, the politician, member of parliament in the Netherlands, who came quite close to becoming prime minister. Not close enough, though. He's also a prominent campaigner against Islam, if you'll recall. Quite a controversial figure in Europe. And the tweet was of an image where it said, "Your tweet has been withheld in," and there's a colon there, and then it says, "Germany." So it caught my eye, and I wanted to look up the tweet, right? Because I'm curious now. All right, so it looks like Germany blocked his tweet. And here is tweet. I'm not going to read the whole thing. "They hate us and kill us, and nobody protects us. Our leaders betray us again. Close our borders." Ah, I'm reading the whole thing. Okay, "Close our borders. De-Islamize our nations now." Okay, hashtag Manchester. And they shut that down. Germany filed a specific request, and I looked it up. Newsweek did a whole thing on this. Apparently, believe it or not, what countries, by the way, do you think over in the general Europe area, what countries do you think are the least, or I'll say this, the most likely to silence the press, silence opinion? What do you think? If you think Russia, maybe Turkey, I mean, we know Putin's a bad guy, right? He's always having journalists killed, so I assume he would be blocking their tweets, too. Turkey and Russia, according to Newsweek, come a distant second and third in their to Germany in their number of requests to block Twitter accounts and Twitter messages. They block whole accounts. Actually, you know, this with Memorial Day coming up and it being a time to reflect on what makes this country great, I'll tell you, one of the things that makes this country terrific is, well, our freedom of speech. A First Amendment right is something that is so unique. It doesn't really exist in other countries in the world. And England is another great example of it. You know, there was a tweet somebody had sent out. Who was this? I have it here in my stack. Katie Hopkins. She's a columnist, I believe, at the Daily Mail in London. And she sends out a tweet. I forget what it was, but at any rate. Oh, I think she says, "Western men, these are your wives, your daughters, your sons. Stand up, rise up, demand action. Do not carry on as normal, cowed." And a bunch of people referred her to the Metropolitan Police in Manchester, who are now investigating her for a hate crime. So I look it up, and I'm obviously curious as to what a hate crime is in England. I want to look at the law. Any here's the relevant part of the statute. Any communication which is threatening or abusive and is intended to harass, alarm, or distress someone is forbidden. And penalties can include fines, imprisonment, or both. Now, I'll tell you, I'll give you a real example that does not involve terrorism when we come back, where these hate speech laws actually really caused widespread devastation to a particular community in England. Because remember, what's speech all about at the end of the day? It's about shedding light on problems. It's on discussing solutions, right? And it's about allowing competing ideas to rise and fall depending on how they succeed in open discussion. But if you don't allow people to talk and you put this kind of limitation on it, I'll show you here right when we come back and tell you how it really, free speech can really go underground and how it's not good. All right, Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
Talk radio, 790 KABC.
The great thing about this country is our First Amendment. And I was explaining how this is not a given in other places, and that is most true in Germany and in England. In England, I was just explaining, there are laws against hate speech. If you engage in hate speech, it's punishable by fines, criminal prosecution, right, imprisonment, that type of thing. Now, it all sounds fine and dandy, excuse me, especially to our friends on the left, right? This was something that Obama touted, and if only we really didn't have this pesky constitution in the way. Well, let me show you an example of what type of speech this pushes underground. You familiar with a town named Rotherham? It's in York, Yorkshire. And Rotherham had a series of rapes occur. And by the way, this is near Manchester. This is the British North and the Midlands, so-called kind of the industrial center of Great Britain. And one thing about this area is there's a tremendous amount of immigration that has happened here. And a lot of these immigrants have come from North Africa and from the Arab world. And there's a number of rapes that were occurring. And there's a reporter who was working for the Times of London. His name is Andrew Norfolk. And Andrew Norfolk said, you know, I went to his editor and said, hey, I'm noticing there's these patterns. I want to look into it. I'm really concerned about what's going on. And they said, yeah, sure, you've got 3 months to investigate it. And he did. And here I'm going to play a clip of him describing what piqued his interest and the type of concern that he had.
I had a growing concern over a number of years about what seemed to be a similar pattern. Small court cases were coming across my desk from across the North and the Midlands, 2, 3, 4 men convicted of offences against girls who were typically aged 11, 12, 13, 14. And it was very difficult to avoid noticing that the names of the men who were being convicted in these cases dotted around the North had one thing in common, which is almost invariably, they tended to be Muslim names. And when we looked into it, we realized it was largely members of the Pakistani community.
So what you had, and by the way, in Rotherham, there were 1,400 girls that were sexually abused. And Rotherham's not even that big of a town. I think it's the ninth largest city in Yorkshire, 10th largest city. And that's the largest one is Leeds, which you probably have never even heard of. So this place is pretty damn small. And the crazy thing is, I think that of those 1,400 cases, all but maybe 2 or 3 were committed by somebody other than these men of Asian descent, is how they're described in reports, rather obliquely. Nobody wanted to talk about it. Nobody wanted to get into the problem that in these communities, this was a problem. And the victims of it, by the way, the victims of it were members of the same community. But nobody could draw the connection. And the best illustration, and Norfolk goes on to explain this, you know, where he's listening to a news report about some of his own reporting. And listen to, he describes some of the actual fear in wanting to approach specifics about the case. Have a listen.
I was driving through the Scottish borders en route to Edinburgh, and a news item came on the radio. Court case had just finished at Manchester Crown Court, not far from here. Nine men had been found guilty of multiple sex offences against one 14-year-old girl. And there was an exchange between the young reporter outside the court and the presenter in the studio in London. The presenter was saying, "This sounds terrible. These are horrific offences. What was it about these nine men? Did they know each, how did they know each other? Did they have anything in common?" And there was an embarrassed silence, and the young reporter sort of went, "No, I don't think there's any suggestion that these men had anything in common." Now, they hadn't named the men, and I sat there in my car, knowing nothing about the case, thinking very uneasily, "I bet I know something these men have in common."
Why isn't she saying it? It's a fact. Report it, and I'll tell you why. Because any communication which is threatening or abusive, that details ethnic or national origin, religion, and is intended to harass, alarm, or distress, is forbidden. People are afraid to speak. All right, I'll tell you more about this right when we come back. Out of time. Back after this.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
Well, you're probably hitting the roads this weekend, visiting friends and family, going to barbecues, whatever it is. And I just want to tell you, be safe out there. Okay, it's gonna. They're always on weekends like this. You have some of the worst driving out there, because that's how these things work. In case you get rear-ended, somebody smashes into you, what do you do? It's so easy. You know, because you listen to the program. There's only one person to call, and that's Attorney Sweet James Bergner, the lawyer we trust on this program to protect you and make sure that you don't get screwed. Right? It's that basic. Yeah, you don't talk to the insurance company on their side. You don't give them any detail. Don't just you call your lawyer. Say, if they call you, say, "I'm represented. I have an attorney, and his name is Sweet James, and he's going to make sure that I'm taken care of." Now, his number is 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit his website, sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Rejofsky talking about freedom of speech. Freedom is not free, right? It's Memorial Day. We know this. But one of the key and cherished freedoms for me is in this country is our ability to speak freely without unnecessary restriction. And one of the most odd things to me is this concept of hate speech that's prevalent in Europe. It's forbidden. Hate speech, let me be honest with you. Hate speech will always be decided subjectively by the person who is hearing it. And when it comes to discussing terrorism and the motives behind terrorism, radical Islam especially, the discussion about it has been driven underground in Europe. We are able to talk about it here. But in Europe, there's a real actual fear of getting prosecuted if you cross some line. And I told you that you can't harass, alarm, or distress somebody with a communication. Isn't that something that's held by the person who's receiving that criticism? It's subjective. I mean, it's based on your intent, but isn't at the end of the day decided by the person or the community of people who are at the receiving end of your criticism? It's kind of like when we talk in this country about people being offended, right? It's a classical liberal move. I'm offended. And we're all supposed to drop everything that we're doing and say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. But whatever happened to having thick skin and dealing with it? And one of the most dangerous things, in my opinion, is if, you know, to orthodox adherents of Islam. This matters because it ties into all these questions of terrorism and all these questions of security that are facing us. To orthodox adherents of the religion, any kind of criticism of the faith of the Prophet Muhammad, not allowed. It's blasphemy, and it's punishable. If you look in the Quran, it's punishable by death. So who's the holder of the offense, right? They decide it. And I think one of the best things, I just think one of the best things for Western civilization, for our world to survive, and our founders knew it, was for all of us to have thick skin, to allow people to say, with very little, you know, exception, what we think and want to say, and to let bad ideas fail in the open marketplace of ideas and not have some silly laws get in the way. I'm going to continue talking about this because it's just near and dear to my heart. All right, we're out of time. Fastest hour in radio in the can, done and over. Have a great weekend. We'll be back Monday, 7 p.m. See you then. Can't stop addicted to the shindig. Chop chop, it says I'm gonna win big. Talk Radio 790 KABC.